From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Bobby Hart is my guest. Along with his partner, Tommy Boyce, Bobby Hart helped create the sound of the Monkees and wrote many of their hits, including their theme. Bobby Hart also wrote or co-wrote tons of other hits for a wide range of artists and is a recording star in his own right, both solo and with Tommy Boyce. He's also just written a groovy book called Psychedelic Bubblegum, Boyce and Hart, The Monkees, and Turning Mayhem into Miracles. Bobby Hart, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hey, Gary, thank you so much.
You know, every spring in Los Angeles when I grew up, my friends and I would attend an event at the Hollywood Palladium. It's called the Teenage Fair.
Yeah.
And on one occasion at the fair, you and your partner, Tommy Boyce, performed, and then you handed me a 45 RPM record I have in my hand right now. And it's called LUV, Let Us Vote. And it has your version of I Want to Be Free on the B-side.
Oh, nice. That's a nice memory. I remember the day. I can't say I remember meeting you, but it's great to...
I don't know how you could forget me. I was just this little guy. But, you know, that record, you know, was a very important record.
Yes, it was, and the campaign was an important one. We, along with hundreds of thousands of others, were able to get the Constitution of the United States changed, and that's no small feat.
Especially, you know, recent elections have really pivoted on the votes of young people. So, I mean, that was a world-changing event that you spearheaded.
It's something we believed in. Of course, it was a different time, but and the draft was still in effect, and 18-year-olds were being sent over. Many of them didn't come back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
So we really believed in the cause that if you didn't have anything to say about going to war, at least you should have something to say about the politicians who sent you there.
Yeah, and it worked.
Yeah.
That must have been a proud day when they actually changed the law.
It was a very satisfying time, and I actually have a copy of the Constitutional Amendment that hangs in my wall.
And I've got a copy of Let Us Vote right here.
It's been a long time getting here. Change is coming and it's very near. A way to change things peacefully. Live together in harmony.
Talk a little bit about how you got started with the Monkees, you know, because I think that's what people remember the most about Boyce and Hart. That's when I first saw the names Boyce and Hart as the writers of Last Train to Clarksville. And
well, you were one of those few people who actually read the names in tiny print, the song titles of the writers. Most people still, to this day, assume that somebody's singing the song where they must have written it. So in the 60s, even more so than now, there was this thing called songwriters that we would do. We would be basically creative short order cooks that would just come up with what was needed. We'd hear about an artist coming up to record in 2 weeks, and we would have something written and demoed and presented to them, and that's how the business worked. We Tommy and I met first in Los Angeles when we were both 18 years old, on the same career path, trying to start up a single songwriting career, a singing career. I think we both wanted to be singers, and got sidetracked into songwriting in order to make that happen. And many years later, we ended up in New York together, and we had our first hits there with Jay and the Americans and the Chubby Checker and others.
What did you write for Jay and the Americans?
We wrote Come a Little Bit Closer, which was, I think, a top three song, and it was their biggest selling record out of like 20 some chart records they had.
It kind of had a Latin beat, didn't it?
It did, yeah, a Latin story in a little cafe just the other side of the border.
Yeah.
So Donnie Kirshner, who who built the most outstanding music publishing company at that time, and maybe of all time, with his partner, Evans Kushner Music. I had just sold his companies to Columbia Pictures and Screen Gems Television. And so on the basis of our success in New York, Donnie signed us to Columbia, Screen Gems Columbia Music. And so, and then we sent us back to the New York office, because even though basically it was still Tin Pan Alley days and all the major music operations were housed in two buildings in Manhattan, the fabled Brill Building and across the street the 1650 building. So because they had been purchased by a movie studio and their operations were out here, they opened a West Coast office and they sent Tommy and I out to work out here and write songs for them. And that was one of the projects that that they sent us over to meet with the producers of the Monkey Show, and they explained what they wanted to do, American Beatles on television, and what they needed for the pilot show, and they also wanted to release records. So we convinced them we were their guys, and worked on the project for almost a year before the show was sold and came on air.
I remember the summer before the Monkees came on. All summer we were hearing Last Train to Clarksville on the radio.
Yeah, the song was actually a hit before the show came on. That's true.
You know, it's interesting because in most sitcoms, you know, I don't think anybody expected the cast of Gilligan's Island to actually be stranded on a desert island. but everybody expected the Monkees to actually be the Monkees.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
And Mickey has made a career out of giving the Star Trek analogy that would be acting, you know, like Mr. Spock is really a Vulcan, you know. It wasn't that. We were four actors hired to play or musicians.
Yeah. In fact, I remember reading somewhere that Chekhov on Star Trek, that his haircut was a direct result of the Monkees, that they were on opposite Star Trek, so they had to have him a Beatle
true.
Haircut.
Yeah, that's true. But they did reach a point, and they were signed right from the beginning. That was, I guess, the long-term vision of the producers of the TV show, that they would go out and perform and actually be recording artists. So they became, as Mickey says, Pinocchio became a real little boy.
Yeah. Now, in your new book, Psychedelic Bubblegum, you point out that their desire to really become a rock group is really what did them in.
Well, it was their desire to control the kind of music they were going to put out. And because it was an Iron Clan contract, they didn't have that power. Until, of course, Michael Nesmith, who was quite clever and had the most experience in the music business, started to wage a war of words in the media. And as the television show became more powerful, as the show became successful, and they were actually able to have the studio fire Donnie Kirshner and take over the direction of their own music.
At the advice of Bobby Hart in his book, Psychedelic Bubblegum, I dug up the original version of Valerie, which is the one that you produced, not the one that was actually released. And what a great record that could have been.
Yeah, and I think it went number one anyway, but still, it's just never like the first time what you capture, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, again, with kind of a Latin beat on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tommy, you know, a lot of these songs were written with Tommy playing his acoustic, and he was an excellent acoustic guitar player, a great sounding Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd been recording the Monkees for a while, and I was working, I was moonlighting in clubs with my band, the Candy Store Prophets, at night, and so I would be doing late hours, I'd be getting up late and so on. But one morning, Donnie called Tommy at home. Tommy and I were sharing a house in Hollywood Hills, and so Tommy and Donnie talked, and Donnie said, "I think the next Monkees single, I've been thinking about this, and I think the next single should have a girl's name in the title." And Tommy, of course, is a consummate salesman, and he always was, without missing a beat. He says, "I can't believe you said that, Donnie. Bobby and I just wrote a song last night and has a girl's name in the title." And Donnie gets excited. He says, "Wow, okay, but you guys got to come over and play it for me immediately. I want to hear this." Tommy says, "Well," Bobby gets in late, you know, 3 in the morning, and so he doesn't get up that early, but we can probably be over there by 11. So he wakes me up, you know, way before I should have been awoken, and he tries to, it takes a little while for, he's got the shower running, and by the time I get out, he's explaining to me that he's promised this finished song with a girl's name in it, and then we have to go play it for Donnie in an hour. So I'm getting dressed, I jump in the car, he jumps in the back seat with his guitar, and he says, start telling me, you know, start naming, just throw out some girls' names. And he's working on a few little chords, so this is where that Latin part comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got some chords, pull up in front of Donnie's house, we have only the name, we agreed on the name Valerie, and these, and this little riff, guitar riff. So we go in, Donnie's very excited to hear it, so he sits down on the couch, Tommy jumps up on the coffee table and starts selling this song. And he's playing and singing his heart out, Valerie, I love her, Valerie. Then there's a little verse that goes in here, Donnie, and then it goes back to Valerie. Donnie said, it's a smash. You got to rush in and do, this is our next single. And even when we finished the song, it didn't have much more than that. It had a couple little two-line verses and a lot of good arrangement and some nice licks. But that was untimely in the respect that just as that was going to come out is when Donnie got fired, and we couldn't put out anything that had anybody, any other producer's name as producer, because it's on the union contract that you have to fill out. Well, a year and a half later, Lester Sill, who had succeeded Donnie Kirshner at Screen Gems, called us in. told Tommy and I that he didn't have anything in the can. A lot of people were cutting things. He didn't think anything was a hit for the next single, but he knew Valerie was a hit. And he said, here's the deal, guys. You guys go back in, same musicians, same arrangement, try to duplicate the record, but this time you don't take producer's credit, and this will be the next single. So that was the one that came out. It was very similar to the first, but not quite
as good as the first
one. you agree, right?
I do, absolutely. Yeah. When that all happened with the Monkees, did you have bad feelings toward them?
Oh, not at all, because it was perfect for us. We had been we'd been in all the fan magazines, Teen Beat and all Tiger Beat, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And as the guys behind the Monkees, and so we had these offers from record labels to record on our own as recording artists, and that's what Tommy and I had both gotten the business to do and wanted to always do. So it was perfect timing for us to sign with A&M Records, where we had 3 albums and 5 chart records. If I had told her that I loved her, she would have stayed till who knows when. But I guess she couldn't understand it when I said I want to be your friend. Because a friend could never doubt you or ever put you up tight. And now I wonder what she's doing. I'm talking with Bobby Hart. He's the guy who, with Boyce and Hart, created so many of the great hits for the Monkees. And Bobby Hart also wrote
hurt so bad for little Anthony. And his new book is called Psychedelic Bubblegum, and I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Hurt So Bad, that was one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, that was just before Tommy and I came out west, came back out west. While I was writing with Tommy in New York, I got a job singing background on and off with a guy named Teddy Randazzo. And so we would play 12 weeks on, 12 weeks off at the Thunderbird in Vegas and other places. And on one of those tours, Randazzo had had success already with Little Anthony. He had been producing Little Anthony for about a year, or maybe less, and they had a couple of big hits. I'm on the outside looking in and going out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Teddy calls a band meeting between sets one night, and he says, I got to fly back to New York because we don't have another single. I got to record something with Anthony. And then he asked me and Bobby Weinstein, one of the other Dazzlers. It was Teddy Randazzo and the Dazzlers. So the three of us went up to a cold, dark ballroom in the Thunderbird Hotel, and because there's a piano there, and we wrote "Hurt So Bad" in the 1 hour break between sets that night. The unusual thing about the song is that then it went top 10 three times. Little Anthony first, three times in three different decades by three different artists.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So you spent. You spend 10 minutes writing a song, and that song is one of the great songs of all time.
Yeah. Well, I always liked that song a lot, yeah.
I'm sure the other thing has happened, too, where you labored over a song for months and nobody ever heard it and didn't...
That's true. That's true. Very true.
I guess sometimes... What is it like as a songwriter? Just sometimes it's like it's in the air and it just comes out of you, or what?
Those are the best ones, usually. And often, as I said, Tommy and I basically, we wrote to order. We knew what act we were writing for. We knew the parameters. We knew what their other records had sounded like, and so on.
A deadline helps you write?
A deadline has always worked best for me.
Yeah.
But sometimes a song like I Want to Be Free, for instance, was a song that we just wrote when we both happened to be home one evening and just felt like writing a song.
Now, is that the first song that's in the first episode of The Monkees? I believe it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it was in the pilot. I don't know if it's shown as the first episode or not.
Little Davies walking on the beach.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that song. That is one of the great songs of all time.
Well, we had that in our pocket when we got the Monkees project. That's just a song we had written and it was sitting there.
Did you produce that Monkees record also?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
We made a great string quartet yesterday type arrangement.
Yeah. Yeah. Do any of the Monkees other than Davey play on that record?
No. In the records that we produced the first album and some cuts on other albums, but all the songs we produced, we used my band, the Candy Store Prophets, plus Louis Sheldon and Wayne Irwin, two other guitar players we added. And I think it really adds to the fact that those records still sound like they're a real band and they're not the studio. We did use the great studio musicians that they call the Wrecking Crew and others in L.A.
Yeah.
For a lot of other projects, but for the Monkees stuff, we only used our band because it was a real band that we had both, you know, it was Randazzo's band first and then the Monkees recordings, and then it became the Boyce and Hart band on the road. So the thing about the Monkees is they were working such long hours on the lot making the television shows that we wouldn't get access to one of the lead singers until maybe 10 at night. And so we'd get Davey or Mickey over and we'd teach them the song hurriedly and they'd go out and nail it in a couple of takes. And that's how we did everything was already there. The backing instrumental tracks, the backing vocals was already on. And then we just put on the whipped cream.
We're talking with Bobby Hart, and he's just written a memoir. It's called Psychedelic Bubblegum. And it's really interesting to see all the ways, you know, all the different places your life has taken you as a musician, including Las Vegas and Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah.
What was Vegas like at the time that you were there?
Well, after playing the Thunderbird Hotel in the lounge and a couple of years earlier, it was a real thrill to open the main room. And after having, you know, our own hits as artists and a career that was kind of taking off. And so we got the engagement. We got to sign the contract that we could get the big bucks and open the main room, but we would have to pair up with a name on their list. They gave us a name of people who could help us fill the room because we were newcomers. First one we went to, we called Jaja, and she was all.
She must have been the last name on the list. That would have been an alphabetical.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we chose her, and she chose us, and it was a real fun time.
Wow. And also, you spent some time hanging out in the Playboy Mansion with Hugh Hefner.
I did, because I was dating a Playmate of the Year in the early 70s for about 5 years. And so we would be invited up there for a lot of the affairs and so on. And I got to know Hef and some of the other people, some of the other regulars up there.
Was that wild?
It wasn't always as wild as you might picture it in your head. It was just, it was movie nights and it was popcorn and...
You played Monopoly.
And Monopoly, yeah.
Was it like strip Monopoly or anything? No, it was just...
No, it was just straight Monopoly. F took his Monopoly game very seriously.
Your book is I think it's a really... There's a lot of laughs and it's a great, interesting story, but I really feel it's a very serious book and it's a very... a heartfelt book, and you talk a great deal in your book about religion and the role that religion played in your life.
Right. Well, I came from a spiritual background, and I had that grounding as a kid, but got a little sidetracked in my youth, especially when I was on the road and just really being pulled in a lot of directions. And somehow it seemed to awaken my spirituality in the middle of all of that, and I credit that with coming out on the other side, still in one piece. A lot of my contemporaries didn't make it through those troubled waters, and I read a book called Autobiography of a Yogi by Yogananda, and that really changed my life, and I became a follower of his, and learned a lot of great things, because he doesn't just teach yoga meditation, he teaches basically how to live in almost any situation. So that part of the book, we do talk a little bit about things that helped me on my journey. And, I didn't think about it ahead, but while you're writing a book, you start to see patterns in your life that you don't see as you're living life.
Right.
At a time.
Yeah.
And those patterns started to emerge. And I said, I really need to share this with some of the people who might benefit from it. So we got these pages in there called Stepping Stones Through the Potholes of Life, and they're on things like creativity and visualization and other things that I felt really helped me. And also, you get to read all the mistakes I made, the stuff that didn't help me, took me the other direction.
What was it hard to be honest with your writing of the book?
At places, you know, the book is so much better because I partnered up with a co-writer named Glenn Ballantyne. And he would just tease things out of me sometimes. He would say, you got to get deeper in that and tell us what you were feeling when you were going through that, or what prompted you, or what it smells like or looks like, what you were feeling. So that, you know, that was our goal, and we spent 6 years on it. So the reader can really come along on the journey and not just read it as a spectator, but try to hopefully experience it with me.
You were originally a rockabilly singer.
Yeah, I guess I was. I loved country music growing up, but as a kid more than pop music. And when I came here at 18 to L.A., and I had a record deal within 4 months of hitting town, I guess that's just what I did. I guess my influences were Ricky Nelson and a little bit of Elvis, and that's what was happening was rockabilly, because that was the first pop music that I really enjoyed once... The country radio station I was listening to, which is the number one station in Phoenix, they were the first to play Elvis and all the other rockabilly guys. So I guess I was influenced by that. So my first couple of records would reflect that, but also I really loved the R&B stuff that I was hearing. So as I progressed, I got more and more into the black sound, and that was my real. That's the kind of stuff I was recording until Tommy and I hooked up, and then of course we pretty much fit into the bubblegum mold to appeal to our Monkees audience, which was already waiting for us.
And a little bit of the singer-songwriter kind of sound.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're also the guy that wrote the theme to The Days of Our Lives. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. It was another appointment that Screen Gem sent us over to meet with two producers of a television show. And a sweet older couple named Ted and Betty Corday, they said, they had had a lot of success with soap operas going back to the radio days. And they said, we want to do this new one called Days of Our Lives. And we just saw Fiddler on the Roof on Broadway, and we loved this song called Sunrise Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, we'll try to come up with something like that. So we thought we did Sunrise Sunset sideways or something.
Yeah, just rearrange it.
Yeah. They heard the demo and they hated it, so we said, well, give us another shot. And we did another try, and we were at the recording studio when we got the word from Lester Sill that they had not liked that one either. And so Tommy said, forget about these people. They don't know what they want. We need to be writing hit songs here. Not this. We didn't know it was going to be on the air for 50 years, 5 days.
Well, did you get a royalty out of that?
Yes, we do, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So I said, Tommy, before we blow them off, now I have one other idea. There's a Hammond B3 organ there. Let me just sit down and I'll start playing what sounds to me like kind of the kind of music that I'd hear in my mother's soap operas on the radio when I was a kid.
Yeah, because they always had organ music in the back.
Yeah, always organ music. So I played that directly onto the tape in the studio. And that's what's been running under the hourglass for 50 years.
It's funny, too, because here they were doing a new show, but really when you went back to the thing that you remembered from the old radio soap operas, that's what they liked.
That's what they liked.
Is it as rewarding to write hit for the Monkees as it is to have a Bobby Hart record?
Yeah, I mean, all the success were rewarding. Always a wonderful surprise when somebody brings a record out again or a song that you wrote, 40 years ago or whatever. The Disney movie that's out there now called Monkey Kingdom used the theme from the Monkees as their opening thing, and all those are wonderful surprises, always rewarding, and it's a different trip when you're recording on your own. But I think any success is going to make you feel pretty good.
And you did a tour also with Mickey and Davey.
Yeah, 10 years after the Monkees started, we went out with Mickey Dolenz, Davey Jones, Tommy Boyce, and Bobby Hart. We called it Dolenz, Jones, Boyce, and Hart, which is hard to say three times fast. and we toured the States for a year or two, and then we ended up with a tour of Southeast Asia. We did 10 days in Japan, and Singapore, Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Taipei, Thailand, Bangkok.
And did kids there know the Monkees?
They did. Yeah, that was how the group got together. Was a concert promoter in Bangkok wanted to book the Monkees, and my friend came back from Bangkok and told me, and my friend must have booked them in Thailand. Could you call Mickey up and check it out? So I did, and Mickey said, "We don't know where Peter is. He's kind of off the radar, and Michael is not interested in touring the Monkees." So my friend, I gave him the information. He said, why don't you and Tommy go out with him? And the four of us got together for lunch, and we had so much fun at that lunch that we decided to give it a try, and we did it for 2 years.
Well, it's just a marvelous book, and I want everybody to know how great it is. It's called Psychedelic Bubblegum, Boyce and Hart, The Monkees, and Turning Mayhem into Miracles.
Yeah.
And the author, my guest, Bobby Hart. I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you, Garrett. It's my pleasure. It's been fun.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at FromTheBookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Bobby Hart. His new book, Psychedelic Bubblegum, Boyce and Hart, The Monkees, and Turning Mayhem into Miracles. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.